නමෝ තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස නමෝ තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස නමෝ තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස So we have completed the මහා හත්ති පදෝපම සුත්ත in which Venerable Sariputta has given a fairly comprehensive explanation about particularly the form aggregate, and then he connected it with other aggregates briefly, and then in overall mentioned about the Four Noble Truths, and very much like taken us from very mundane physical level to a supramundane understanding. Now Venerable Sariputta is the one who is only second to the Buddha from his wisdom, and there are various suttas around him, and again himself has recited many suttas, explained them to the other monks, and I have selected another one which is also by Venerable Sariputta. This is available in the Bojjhanga Samyutta, where Venerable Sariputta talks about the seven enlightenment factors. ඒකං සමයං ආයස්මා සාරිපුත්තෝ සාවත්තියං විහෙරති ජේතවනේ අනාථ පිණ්ඩිකස්ස ආරාමේ. So at that time Venerable Sariputta is residing at Anatha Pindika's park, Jetavanarama, and there he is addressing the monks. So he particularly want to give a teaching to the monks, so he is now teaching. Sattime avaso bojjanga katame satta sati sambojjhango dhammaviche sambojjhango viriya sambojjhango piti sambojjhango passaddi sambojjhango samadhi sambojjhango upekkha sambojjhango. So these may be already familiar to you. So there are seven enlightenment factors: the enlightenment factor of the mindfulness, the enlightenment factor of the discrimination of states, or we can say the investigation, then the enlightenment factor of energy, enlightenment factor of rupture, enlightenment factor of tranquility, that is passaddi, enlightenment factor of concentration, the samadhi, and the enlightenment factor of equanimity. Now why they are called enlightenment factors, why they are called sambojjhanga? So this also actually asked by one venerable monk from the Buddha. Bojjhanga bojjhanga adibante ucchati kittavatanuko bhante bojjhanga ati ucchati. It is mentioned, Venerable Sir, as the enlightenment factors. Why are they called enlightenment factors? Bodhaya sangvattanti tiko bhikkave tasma bojjhangati vuccati. So Buddha answers telling, since it is causing the enlightenment, it's causing the understanding, so that's why they are called enlightenment factors. So basically the one main function of the enlightenment factors is they are promoting realization, they are promoting the understanding. So basically we can't immediately come to the level of the enlightenment factors. Say for example, if we consider the sati sambojjhanga, so it is not that we are immediately at the sati sambojjhanga level when we start our practice. We can simply say we are starting with some bare attention. Say we are trying to do walking meditation and our foot is touching the ground, and we are simply trying to establish mindfulness there. So it is simply paying attention. So there the foot is on the ground and there is a sensation, and now we are trying to direct our attention to that sensation. Simply keeping our attention there, because our attention could be fairly distracted. There are various thoughts related to the past, related to the future. At the same time, at the present moment also, there are various other distracting sounds, smells, tastes, maybe sights. But at the same time, now the foot is touching the ground. Now that should be our selected object, preferred object. Now we are trying to pay attention to that. So that is how we start. And here we simply say it is simply a bare attention. So while all the other information is there, so now we select purposely this sensation of the foot. Now after that, again mind can drifted, and after a while, then the left foot is touching the ground. Again there is a sensation. Again now we are trying to pay attention there. So likewise, we are again and again paying attention to a selected object. So this is how we start, and this actually helps us to establish mindfulness in the present moment, because these sensations are happening in the present moment, but all other things, either they are in the present moment or they are mind-made, past activities as a memory or future activities as a plan, as a dream. But what we have selected is the present moment activity, that is the sensation of the foot. Now, so as we continue it, so we may become a little familiar with this process. Now we are able to walk amidst all other distractions are there, but again and again paying attention to that sensation. So now we can simply say, okay, mind has reduced its association to the past and the future, and it is very much like taken to our desired object. It is very much like directed to desired object. So this is how we start the mindfulness. Now we can simply say, okay, now once a while, time to time, mindfulness is established in the present moment, something happening in the present moment. So as we continue, so this is growing to a level where the continuity is maintained. Now it is not once a while, but fairly a considerable period of time, the mindfulness is continuously available, and then we can say, okay, little bit of mindfulness is established now. So as we continue the practice and spreading it to various other activities, not limiting to walking, maybe breathing, maybe various other daily activities, so likewise we are expanding. So similarly, the mindfulness is growing. Now it reaches another level called Sati Indriya, where the mindfulness has become dominant. So you may start understanding, okay, there is a quality developing in the mind which helps to be in the present moment, and it avoids any other distractions, and even mind get drifted, that also can be noticed. It is within your supervision. The mind is now working very much like, even it is shifting to another object which is not the desired object, still it happens under your purview, and if necessary now you can again bring it back. So likewise, now things are happening under your supervision. So you have become the in charge of the mind. So where we can simply say the mindfulness has become the in charge. Mindfulness has become the governor. Sati Indriya. And as we continue, so more and more you feel confident about the practice, and the mindfulness become available to you fairly for a long time. And now you have your own methods to establish it, re-establish it, and now you develop confidence and reach the what call as power of mindfulness, Sati Bala. At that level, since you are confident, even when mind get drifted to something else and completely lost the present moment, still you don't feel kind of shocked. You don't feel disturbed, because you know it's easily you can establish back, because your own practice has become fairly stable and you yourself has fair confidence. So even a little such drift does not make you yourself upset, make yourself disturbed, because you know how to do it. You know how quickly you can establish mindfulness. So that is the level of what we call the power of mindfulness. And as we continue, we reach the enlightenment factor of mindfulness, that is the Sati Sambojjhanga. One important milestone here is that your mind is more turned towards the spiritual growth rather than mundane kind of activities. Now you are very much like your everything has become very much like streamlined. towards some understanding, towards some say eradication of defilements, going through the Buddha's teaching more thoroughly. So you have taken a kind of a decision. So your whole life has now somewhat directed towards the understanding, realization of Nibbana, and your practice is very much like now streamlined towards achieving this goal. Previously it is very much like scattered, you are doing once a while, when others are also telling, okay, you are doing it, and there is no proper vision, and it's not yet matured. But here, now it's fairly matured, and so you are very much directed towards achieving a goal. It is not a kind of material gains or fames, rather it is more into the realization. So this is the turning point in the practice. When the enlightenment factor of mindfulness is there, so it is now developed so that this goal, this sublime goal, is further reinforced or further able to achieve. And fair amount of continuity is also there. So the continuous mindfulness is fairly available, and it is also not so strenuous. Previously you have to struggle because mind drifts again and again, but now it is not so. So kind of a smooth practice is possible, and you don't need to struggle. A fair amount of mindfulness is available. So likewise, so the enlightenment factor of mindfulness, sati sambodhyanga, can be recognized via one sense that your mind is more attuned towards realization, attaining Nibbana, abandoning all other mundane goals, and fair amount of mindfulness is available continuously. Here we can say, okay, now we have reached the level of sati sambodhyanga. Then Buddha explained how one would go to the second one, that is the dhammavicaya, where you are requested to recognize various phenomena carefully, to examine them, to investigate them. There you start the investigation enlightenment factor, dhammavicaya sambodhyanga. So as you do this, it is not easy because these phenomena are not so interesting phenomena, but they are very neutral phenomena. So you need fair amount of effort to maintain this process, because mind might not want to continue. It is difficult. The information is not visible, not available, not accessible. So you have to put forth a lot of effort. And on the other hand, the effort has to be properly balanced. So how to kind of do a tuning of the effort. Now all that helps to develop the enlightenment factor of the effort, virya sambodhyanga. And as you continue the practice, so now you gain this capacity, you are developing those necessary skills, you know what is the necessary amount of effort to be maintained, you know how to properly aimed to an object so that the information is, or the details are available to you. Now the details are getting more and more revealed, more and more accessible, and you are doing the process, you are practicing vipassana, so that the different phenomena, those characteristics become more and more evident. Say if you are practicing vedanupassana, all the different types of feelings are accessible. You can recognize pleasurable feelings, you can recognize painful feelings, you can recognize neutral feelings. Not mere superficially, but you can recognize how they are arising, how they are changing, how they are passing away. So are there any gaps between them? And are there any changes in the intensities? So all that become more and more evident. So the process is now continuing. Now you are fairly sharpening the faculties now, and you reach what we call the Piti Sambodhyanga, where you feel happy about the process now. You don't need to struggle now. Things are happening smoothly. Mind has understood the process. You are gaining some skills, some proficiency in the practice. So the piti, passaddi, so those enlightenment factors become available to you because some happiness is there, some joy is there, hindrances are completely subsided, and the practice is catching its momentum, and the mind is fairly balanced. So the rapture is there, some happiness is there, and after that, the tranquility is there. So mind become very serene, calm, relaxed, neutral, and moving towards that sort of a tranquil state. Passadi Sambojjhanga is also there. And when it happens, it doesn't need to get shifted because very much like within the body, within the mind, there's a fair calmness available, some tranquility available. So the mind become more and more concentrated. Mind doesn't want to get distracted. And even if you simply let it be, it doesn't want to go out. Simply it likes to stay at home. So the Samadhi Sambojjhanga is also there. Mind is fairly capable of staying at one point. And you are keeping your attention at a particular given moment, given point, given object, and mind, without any struggle, stay there as you wish. Now you have nothing to do, so everything is well attuned, everything is fairly synchronized, and everything is in well balance. Now you simply can rest, you can be equanimous about the situation, so you reach the Upekkha Sambojjhanga, the equanimity, the factor of enlightenment called the equanimity. So you can see in this process there's a linear type of growth explained as in the Anapanasati Sutta. So the enlightenment factors are growing in a linear form, starting with sati, then towards the dhammavicaya, then the viriya, then piti, then passaddi, then samadhi, and ultimately the upekkha. And there is a growing, there's a maturing of these enlightenment factors. So it is not the beginning type of mindfulness that you are experiencing as you are growing. It is not the beginning type of dhammavicaya you are experiencing as you are growing. So these enlightenment factors are also subjected to a revolution, an evolution. Say, for example, at the beginning, so we started mindfulness with a lot of effort because mind is so untamable. So we can simply say it is scattered. But now it is more and more smooth, careful. And it can stay at one pointed in the present moment. And now you don't need much effort. Now it is very much like effortless mindfulness. Very smooth. Just staying there. And Dhammavicaya also like that. So the understanding growing. Say if you start with the feelings, okay, different types of feelings you are able to recognize. Later, you are able to recognize different intensities of them. You are able to recognize any resting periods, kind of absence of certain type of feelings. And then probably you are able to understand how they are arising, changing, passing away. And then you are able to understand their common characteristics, like how impermanent, transient they are, how unsatisfactory they are, and how non-governable they are. And you can't say it belongs to you, and they are produced as a result of the contact. So these are actually the growth of the wisdom. So the growth of the wisdom happens at different levels, and it's a maturing of the Dhammavicaya. Then the energy. See, at the beginning it's a kind of a struggle because mind doesn't want to do it, it's very difficult to recognize phenomena. And even if you are trying hard, mind get sort of become restless, so you don't know how to do the balancing. Later you are learning it, practicing it, doing a lot of falls and again correcting yourself. So now you are coming to a level, okay, it's a kind of maintenance. You don't need to struggle now, it's a kind of maintenance of the practice. It has become very smooth. So the energy, the effort, also going through some evolution. And then rupture, at the beginning there is no rupture at all because you are still struggling and failing. Later, as you continue, you become more successful, you feel happy, you feel joyful. And as you further continue, that joy turns into equanimity. Because it has become available to you, you are maturing in that. So it is not, it does not produce much joy now, but rather it's more and more equanimous. Tranquility, similarly, the bodily tranquility is available and the mind also become tranquil and not restless, not agitated, and fairly it is tranquil. And that tranquility may even pervades even after the meditation. So at the beginning, it's only available after some time during your session, and later it may be able to have it just after the beginning of your session. And later, even after the session, after your meditation session, the mind's tranquility may be available. So likewise, the tranquility become accessible, available to you, and even during the daily activities, still the tranquility is available. So likewise, the tranquility is pervading your life. So even while eating, talking, driving, everywhere, so very much like you become a tranquil person, not agitated. So mind's agitation, restlessness become less and less. The mind become very calm, relaxed, unagitated. So tranquility become kind of mature and available. And equanimity, on the other hand, is another mature type of enlightenment factor. So more and more, the rupture become not much available, but the tranquility become available. So mind become more matured, like a kid is now maturing towards an adult. So the mind is becoming more mature. It's a equanimous mind towards all the phenomena. It is not the mere equanimity feeling, rather equanimity based on the wisdom. So, and this equanimity also able to have when you are seeing objects. So you are going through various objects, you are seeing them. There may be some pleasant scenes and some may be some disturbing scenes, but still mind is capable of maintaining, retaining that stability, retaining that equanimity, even though it is seeing some disturbing visuals. On the other hand, you may be listening to various things, you can hear various sounds, some noisy environment, but still the mind can retain that equanimity. Previously, it is very difficult. Even if a little sound breaks your attention, again you need to establish mindfulness, very, very difficult. So you are in search of a very quiet place for your meditation. But later, as you are maturing, even sounds does not disturb much. You can simply listen to them, come back to yourself, and maintain the stability of the mind. So the equanimity is available even amidst various sounds. Similarly, towards the smells, tastes, tangibles, even the thoughts, does not make big impact to the mind. Mind is capable of retaining its equanimity. So equanimity also going through some evolution. Now, so with that understanding, let's get on to the Venerable Sariputta's explanation. Now, he is telling, these are the seven factors of enlightenment. Whichever of these seven factors of enlightenment I want to dwell in during the morning, I dwell in that factor of enlightenment during the morning. Whichever I want to dwell in during the middle of the day, I dwell in that factor of enlightenment during the middle of the day. Whichever I want to dwell in during the evening, I dwell in that factor of enlightenment during the evening. Now, he is so proficient in this enlightenment factors. So, previously we were struggling with them. We don't know how to achieve them, how to make them available, and we are struggling. And later we have some understanding about them, and we just explain how they are linearly growing, and later you come to a level that enlightenment factors are available in the mind. So that's a more mature level. So you understand, okay, these factors are now operative in the mind. They are available. And you don't need to struggle now. Now they are very much like a kind of a maintenance project. You don't need to arouse them, or you don't need to struggle with them. Rather, it's a matter of carefully, properly maintaining them. Now the development of the enlightenment factors completely change from that doing mode to the being mode. So the previously you are doing preparations to have the enlightenment factors, to mature the enlightenment factors, to develop the enlightenment factors. Now it's a matter of maintaining them, being with them. So your entire practice has shifted from doing mode to the being mode. Sati sambojjhangam bhavayeti viveka nisitam, viraga nisitam, nirodha nisitam, hosagga parinami. Dhamma vichaya sambojjhangam bhavayeti viveka nisitam, viraga nisitam, nirodha nisitam, hosagga parinami. So likewise, Buddha repeats to all the enlightenment factors. So after you reach this state, there is no sort of a linear relationship. Rather, now everything is very much like a proper balance, contributing towards each other, maintaining kind of a harmony, maintaining that harmony in the mind. So mental well-being is there. So it's a matter of maintenance. So Venerable Sariputta now points out, if he likes to have a particular enlightenment factor thoroughly at high intense, so he can do so in the morning. So if he like to have a different enlightenment factor more accessible in his mind during the afternoon, okay, he can do so. And whatever enlightenment factor he prefer to have in the evening, he can have it. And this is very interesting part. And then he further can recognize, if friends, it occurs to me, let it be the enlightenment factor of mindfulness, it occurs to me it is measureless. Now he is very much like doing an inner contemplation, kind of introspection. So what is the level of mindfulness right now? Is it available? If it is available, what is its level? It is completely fully matured, fully available. It is only very limited, a very narrow amount of mindfulness available. So it is, or else it is completely pervaded. Everywhere I can maintain mindfulness from the morning to the evening, say. So likewise, each and every activity I am able to maintain. So sometimes when we start developing mindfulness, say while eating, probably you can maintain mindfulness, but while walking you can't, while drinking you can't, while talking you can't. Maybe you started with brushing the teeth, there you can maintain mindfulness, but while bathing you can't, while eating you can't. So likewise, it is not spreaded, it is not measureless, rather it is very much like limited. So here Venerable Sariputta mentioned, okay, when I examine the power enlightenment factor of mindfulness, I can recognize its state, its level, whether it is measureless, it is pervaded, everywhere I am able to maintain mindfulness. Or is it perfected? Are there any glitches? Are there any imperfections? Or is it perfected? It's very much like a matured mindfulness available everywhere. Or are there any kind of faults, any discrepancies? When it is available, I easily understand it available, it is persisting. And on the other hand, if it abates in me, I understand it has abated in me for a particular reason. He understands the reason also. So that means it is not that he has the mindfulness perfectly throughout the life. Rather, there may be a reason that the mindfulness enlightenment factor become weaker, and then he know why it has become weaker. Now say for example, there are instances even the arahants have become sick You can remember the stories of Venerable Mahamoggallana, Venerable Sariputta himself, and again Venerable Mahakassapa. So they all become severely sick. And certain other monks visit them, and they, when they inquire, or the Buddha himself visiting Venerable Moggallana, for example, and he's asking, how are you, Venerable Moggallana? Are you doing well, or are you feeling well now? How about your sickness? Is it reducing? Is it recovering? And Venerable Mahamoggallana replies, no, Bante, it's getting more critical, very severe, I'm very difficult, I'm maintaining this life at a difficult way. So he's explaining that situation. So we can't say now the enlightenment factors are at its full-fledged. Rather, there are certain weaknesses, or we can say simply reduction of enlightenment factors, their intensities. And later, Buddha very much like further explain about the enlightenment factors. He arouses some sort of energy in the listener by talking about the enlightenment factors. Maha Kassapa Bojjhanga, Maha Moggallana Bojjhanga, Chunda Bojjhanga. Now all are actually explanations talking about the enlightenment factors, and those discourses actually help to regain the capacities, further doing that tuning of the enlightenment factors. And ultimately, they are even able to abandon the sickness by doing that proper synchronization or proper balance. So therefore, even the arahants have gone through these ups and downs of the life. And so therefore, they can say, as Venerable Sariputta mentioned here, so he know what is the exact reason, what is the exact cause, in case a particular enlightenment factor has become weaker. Now, similarly, he explained about the other enlightenment factors. So, what is about the wisdom, the enlightenment factor of the Dhamma Vichaya? So, is it very penetrative type of wisdom now available? Is it perfected? Everywhere it is available, each and every activity I can maintain such a very sharp wisdom, or only at different occasions, or when it is available, he knows it is available. And if there is no proper enlightenment factor of investigation, there also he knows, okay, due to these reasons, it has become weaker. Similarly, he is talking about the piti, passaddi, samadhi, upekkha. So he is very much like capable of understanding their intensities, their availability, their level of availability, their presence, everything is very much available to him. It's very sharp. So he can do an introspection about his mind and recognize so how the enlightenment factors are now operating in the mind. Now he's giving a beautiful simile to his previous statement. So previous statement is that he is mentioning that if necessary, I can have mindfulness enlightenment factor as the chief in the morning. Say I'm giving a little scenario. If I want to have, say, Dhamma Vichaya as the chief in the middle of the day, okay, I can have that as the chief. Say during the evening, if I want to have tranquility enlightenment factor as the most dominant enlightenment factor, okay, I'm having tranquility as the most dominant enlightenment factor. So likewise, his mind is very much under his control. So he can control which type of enlightenment factor I have to have in the morning, which kind of enlightenment factor I want to have in the middle of the day, which kind of enlightenment factor I want to have during the evening. Accordingly, I can do the adjustments, can do the changes. So he's giving a beautiful simile here. Suppose, friends, a king of a royal minister had a wardrobe full of differently colored clothes. Whatever suit he might want to wear in the morning, he would wear in the morning. whatever suit he might want to wear during the middle of the day, he would wear during the middle of the day. Whatever suit he might want to wear in the evening, he would wear in the evening. So he has many suits, many clothes. So he can choose whatever he like. Say he has an occasion to attend in the, say according to this scenario, he has an occasion to attend in the, at the palace, king's palace. So he is wearing that suit there. Now during the evening, say at the middle of the day, he has another occasion, a festival to attend. So he is using a different set. Maybe in the evening, say he has some, say a chanting or something like that, he want to attend, okay, he is selecting that suit, which is more appropriate there, so he is selecting that cloth. So similarly, Venerable Sariputta mentioned, in the morning, if I prefer one kind of an enlightenment factor be more abundant, so I am selecting that, maintaining that. In the middle of the day, if I prefer to have another different enlightenment factor to become more dominant, okay, I am able to do that. The evening, if I want to have something different enlightenment factor, I am able to do that. So you can see what a kind of a proficiency he had with respect to the enlightenment factors. So not only they are available, now he is mastering them. So he is mastering the enlightenment factors. So you probably have heard about mastering of jhana. So you are able to attain a jhana, dwell in the jhana for a while, and then emerge from the jhana. And you are able to jump from one jhana to another jhana, attain from first jhana to second, second to third, third to fourth, say fourth back to third. So all these are kind of proficiency one can develop with respect to jhana. So these are some of the practices. Those are also not easy, very, very difficult. But here Venerable Sariputta doing this scenario with the vipassana, we can say. So the enlightenment factors are causing the enlightenment, complete liberation in the mind. So he is now capable of manipulating them as he want. He was able to control them, want to do adjustments as he wish. So very interesting part, actually, Venerable Sariputta is revealing about his mind and what a capacity, what a capability he had with respect to the enlightenment factors. Actually, sometimes merely we can recognize the presence of the enlightenment factors. And what are they are present? Is mindfulness available right now in the mind? How about the penetrative wisdom, investigative type of wisdom? Is it available in the mind? Is the mind happy or unhappy? Is the piti available or not? How about the tranquility? Is the mind calm, relaxed, tranquil? You can check whether is it the case. And again, when it is fairly concentrated, so you can check. Or is it get distracted? You can check, you can be aware. And if it is equanimous also, you probably can check it. You can be sort of mindful about it. But Venerable Sariputta has gone to the best of it. So he can know, okay, this particular enlightenment factor is available and to what extent. Is it available every time, everywhere, at an unlimited way, at a very perfect level? Or are there any shortcomings? So what are the causes for this shortcoming? So he has the full proficiency in each and every enlightenment factor. And on top of that, he is capable of mastering it. When it is necessary, he can have it. He can have a particular enlightenment factor as the chief, as the most dominant kind of an enlightenment factor. He can do such kind of a dominancy, adjustments to the enlightenment factor. So when it is preferred, okay, particular enlightenment factor is taking the upper hand. The others are balanced and they are at the supportive level. One is more predominant. So this is a very interesting case that Venerable Sariputta explained in this Vatta Sutta. And I like to share that with you. And here recognizing of enlightenment factors, whether they are available and to what extent they are available. So what are the causes in case they are weak? So how we are able to further develop it? And these are interesting things that we better pay our attention, because now if as we are very much like maturing in our practice, so we should be able to introspect our mind. We need to again and again reflect on our mind. So what is the state of the mind? Is it mindfulness available, investigation available, wisdom available, some calmness, tranquility available, effort available, or equanimity available? So very much like doing some sort of probing into the mind and see whether these factors are available and to what extent and to what intensity. And there are other occasions that the Buddha, for example, in the Agni Sutta, explain us to have a balance in the enlightenment factors. I already have mentioned this case that certain enlightenment factors are more activate in the mind. In that category, Dhamma Vichaya, Viriya, Piti, investigation, enlightenment factor, the effort and the rupture are more into that side. It activates the mind. It motivates the mind. It generates some more energy in the mind. On the other hand, the other three enlightenment factors, Passaddhi, Samadhi, Upekkha, that is the tranquility, concentration and the equanimity, they are more and more calming down, relaxing, make the mind more restful. So these two groups are very much little opposite to each other, and the mindfulness is the one observing its availability or the imperfections or imbalances, and now mindfulness has to be maintained continuously so that proper balancing of these two groups should be available. So in case the activity side or the active side is more prominent, then the mind can become restless. If the inactive side or more calmness, tranquility become more prominent, then there could be a lethargic, drowsy, sleepy kind of a mood. So the mind has to have a kind of evenness. And while keeping that also in your mind, you can understand what Venerable Sariputta is doing. So he understands this as well. But if he prefer to have more tranquil state in the mind, or he is able to maintain that. If you want to have more active, vigilant state of the mind, he is able to maintain that. But without any restlessness, without any sleepiness, not going to that complete imperfect level, but maintaining a proper balance. But the taste of the mind, the quality of the mind is very much under his scrutiny. Okay, very, very interesting mastery in one's mind. So the Venerable Sariputta is the perfect one in this. So it's very interesting sutta, giving up some indication what are the capacities that he is having, these arahants are having. And with that note, I like to conclude today's sutta teaching session. Now I like to open the session for questions. Yeah, so you have a question. Okay, we have a question from our side.
Thanks for your teaching, Bhante. So this is Sutta 46 in 46.4,
mm-hmm.
Samyutta.
Mm-hmm.
Nikaya. Okay, thank you. So I guess the thing I was interested in knowing about was when Shariputta is practicing with, you know, say in the morning, using heightening, say, rapture or tranquility. Is he? I guess what I get from this is that he's sort of studying and learning from that enlightenment factor, or sharpening it, or some kind of study, and then also that possibly this is what he's doing, and then also that he would have to only bring that, like if he's going to look at how tranquility come about, then mm-hmm. he wouldn't want to bring that up too much. Mm-hmm. He would just want to raise it, keeping a balance of all the enlightenment factors, but raising tranquility just enough so it's not overbalanced.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. So, he shouldn't go into the overbalance, then he loses the balance.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, what I feel through this sutta is like, say, assume that he has a meeting to attend, a kind of a council to attend that he has to teach or he has to preach and something like that. So assume that he want to be more sharp in what he's talking. Then the faculties like effort, dhamma vichaya should be more sharp.
Okay.
But there may be situations, okay, he want to take a rest, calm, relax. Then the tranquility enlightenment factor, the equanimity enlightenment factor may be more supportive in that mood.
Yeah.
So I feel like he is capable of appropriately managing them.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So things are under full supervision. As you said, not causing him to go to the extreme.
Yeah.
Say for example, if the enlightenment factor of investigation become too much, then the mind become restless. But he's not allowing that either. But now he's taking it to the edge. Enlightenment factor of investigation is taking to the edge. It is the most dominant part, but not losing the complete balance.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a kind of a sharpening of that, taking it to the upper hand, while others are supportive, not losing the balance to the mind either.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, say when it is necessary to have tranquility, so he is able to completely tranquilize the mind. So the mind still not get into the lethargic mood, not get into the complete inactive mood, but still active, but very sublime, very peaceful, very calm, very tranquil. Mm-hmm. So he is enjoying that.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I feel, that he's playing at these, the boundaries without losing them.
Yeah, he's utilizing them in his life.
Exactly.
In ways that
he's enjoying it too. Very much, like, isn't it? He's playing,
yeah.
Playing like a game.
Playing.
So in the jhana also, sometimes it is mentioned, so when they become more proficient in jhana, they can play with jhana. Say you can attain from 1 to 2nd, 2nd to 3rd, 3rd to 4th, say 4th back to 3rd, 3rd to 2nd, 2nd to 1st, again 1 to 3rd, 3rd to 5th. So you can play with them because you have the complete mastery,
yeah.
Something like that. So when I read this sutta, I feel the same kind of a capacity in Venerable Sariputta with respect to vipassana. So he's playing with the enlightenment factors, with the bodhjhangas. So he has the complete mastery of them. So he's able to play with them. If he prefer one particular environment factor to become the most dominant enlightenment factor, he can take it up.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, he's an arahant.
Yeah, that's the thing.
And
that's yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, but you're on the way to become one.
Well,
you should practice.
So you are asking, why is he playing it? Is it the course? You're asking?
Yeah, in a way, like, why does he need to do that?
No, I think, that's the thing. I think depending on the situation.
Uh-huh.
That's why, depending on the practical situation, he may be adjusting it. That's what I said.
Uh-huh.
Say he has to attend certain activity.
Mm-hmm.
Say where very sharp mind is necessary. It's a very investigative type of penetrative wisdom is the most required type of skill.
Mm-hmm.
If necessary, assume that he is more having that part at the right hand.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, assume that now everybody is calming down, really relaxing. Say it's a better, beautiful evening and maybe closer to the night. Say the moon is there, full moon is there. Now he doesn't want to do any preaching, rather he want to tranquilize himself. Okay, he's taking to that mood.
Yes.
So likewise, I feel depending on the situation, he is doing the adjustments to the mind so that he is capable of handling the situation more thoroughly, more properly.
Yeah.
And I feel that is that may be the reason he is doing those, say, kind of an adjustments.
And can I say then, would he also, I mean, he wasn't perfectly enlightened.
Correct,
I mean,
correct.
So he could also be kind of raising his level in a way. Is that possible with him? Is it possible that he had more work to do even as an arahant?
Definitely. Yeah. Because he has a lot of work to do. Because Buddha has given him various difficult tasks. For example, I'll just give you some example. Now, you know, probably you can remember Venerable Devadatta. He took 500 monks away from the Buddha.
Yes.
So he made the schism and the 500 monks taken the side of the Devadatta. Yeah. And then Devadatta took all 500 monks.
Uh-huh.
So now they are living with Venerable Devadatta.
Yes.
And they were there for some time, and later Buddha knew, okay, their faculties are now sharpening. Once the proper Dhamma is explained to them, they will become arahants and they will come back to me.
Mm-hmm.
So Buddha didn't go there. He asked Venerable Sariputta to do it. So it's a difficult task. Now he is going to the, you know, the opposition.
Yes.
So Venerable Sariputta is asked to go to the opposite side now.
Mm-hmm.
To the opposition and carry the members from there and to this side, like in the parliament.
Yeah.
So you are now asked to sit on the opposition side and convince the monks there, the members there, and bring them back to this side. So that's the task assigned to Venerable Sariputta. So he went there, preached them, did the thing all properly, and those monks also become enlightened. He returned back with those 500 monks. So likewise, these are not easy tasks, isn't it? I mean, he's going to the opposition and the people may be looking at him in a more doubtful way. They want to attack him and they may be asking various difficult questions. So he has to be very equipped, has to be very sharp. So in such occasion, probably he's keeping, I don't know, I'm just assuming, keeping certain skills more very sharp, more intense, so that he can handle the situation carefully, properly. Depending on such scenario, he may be doing the internal adjustments.
Okay, yes. Yeah. And my experience, I mean, what I think I experience in meditation is the arising of all enlightenment factors. And it feels, well, I don't know if they're balanced, see, that's the thing, but I do recognize each
correct
enlightenment factor. And they seem to arise together, in a way. Is that
correct
true? Or?
Yeah, I also think so. So, but as I just explained, at the beginning, they are linearly growing.
Yeah.
Say, equanimity is not available. Say, tranquility is not available. You are still developing the investigation, developing the effort, balancing the effort. So, you are struggling with the practice. Later, you become more proficient. Now, you don't need to struggle. Now, very much like you understood how to do it. Now it's a continuation, it's a maintenance of the practice.
Mm-hmm.
Now later, equanimity become more prominent. It's available to you most of the time. Not much into the too much excessive effort. Now things are very much like effortless.
Mm-hmm.
So things are available to you, accessible to you. And most dominant factor may be the equanimity and maybe the tranquility. Because there is no agitation in the mind, so the mind also has given up attachments and the mind has fairly released, not holding, grasping things. So you become more and more equanimous towards all the phenomena. So it is. So ultimately we can see, so we are maturing more into the equanimity. Etan santang, etan panitang, edidang upekka. So Buddha also promotes, okay, monks, you need to return back to that equanimity, associate that equanimity, dwell in that equanimity. That is more sublime, that is more serene.
Mm-hmm.
So likewise, the enlightenment factor of equanimity and tranquility may become more dominant than the other enlightenment factors as we may be moving forward.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's what I seem to notice. And I've, like Chief Bhante has, you know, said, and I think you also say, just keep coming to that place of equanimity where the mind isn't so interested in, you know, like investigating particularly.
Correct.
But that's okay But then that seems like investigation is...
No, that's another point.
Present.
Now, here, so while you are resting at this equanimous state,
yeah.
even though there are no phenomena to investigate, it doesn't mean that you lose the wisdom at all, isn't it?
Right.
So you are maintaining this unattached state with the support of the wisdom.
There's a clarity there.
There's a clarity there. Because you know that it's very evident to you that no point of attaching to these phenomena. It's very much like now an understood scenario. So it's quite evident to you, okay, no point of attaching to these conditioned phenomena. They are transient, they are imperfect, and they are unsatisfactory, they are ungovernable. So you've given up everything. Now you don't want to, you know, put yourself into trouble again, because they are useless. They are not worth of attaching. They are not worth of holding. So that understanding is very much with you. So that's why the factor of investigation does not mean that you are supposed to investigate phenomena every time. So it is maturing towards a kind of a different levels of wisdom.
So it's a deeper level of investigation that's happening.
Exactly. Investigation, the term investigation, as we say, you need certain phenomena to investigate. But now there are no phenomena, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Probably you can investigate the level of the mind, state of the mind. So what is the state of the mind? Is it balanced? Is it proper?
Mm-hmm.
So something like that maybe. But still you are equipped with that capacity, isn't it? Even a slightest thing, when any discrepancy happens in the mind, you can quickly notice it.
Yes.
So that's a very sharp investigative quality in the mind.
Yes.
It is available in the mind,
uh-huh.
but no phenomena are there to investigate, by the way.
Yes, and it's not it's an intuitive investigation
exactly.
rather than like what we consider as
analyzing, yes.
Describing things and pinpointing
exactly.
the problem. And
exactly.
It's not a mental practice.
It's not a conceptualization at all.
It's not like studying in school or something.
Exactly. Exactly. But rather you are very vigilant. You are very sharp.
Uh-huh.
Very sharp, but nothing is there.
Yes. Yes.
But the moment anything comes to the conscious, awareness, so you can easily notice it.
Yes.
Something like that.
I noticed that too. It's just, it's very sharp.
Very sharp.
But it's not trying to go to anything.
Anything. Exactly.
So it's more like you're open and things are coming in.
Coming in but not disturbing either.
Yeah.
Isn't it? So
yeah.
They are coming in, you are quite receptive, but you don't want to disturb them. So they simply mind their own business. They come and go. You are not bothered,
mm-hmm.
but you can see what's happening.
And I guess in that time, if we did have a great deal of pain arise, let's say, then if we can maintain that equanimous, you know, sense and that relaxed, unified sense, then we could investigate that pain.
If necessary.
Yeah, if necessary. Yeah.
But otherwise, you can ignore it.
Yeah.
Because the point is, because why are we going to investigate? Now, suppose
well,
there's
because a... Because we were disturbed by it, I guess.
Yeah, maybe you can check if it's necessary. If you want to change the posture, if you have accidentally put yourself on a thorn or something, probably you can quickly notice it. You can simply take an action.
Yeah.
But otherwise, suppose that there is a pain, bodily pain.
Yeah.
Now, you already has taken medicine.
Yeah.
You have taken some action, but still the pain is there.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel we don't need to investigate now.
Yeah.
Because it will be a burden to the mind to give another phenomena, because now the mind has the capacity to rest. Mind has the capacity to become equanimous and without attaching to anything, without paying attention to anything.
Yeah.
So you purposely directing it back to a pain will be a unnecessary effort.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I noticed that, like, I do walking meditation in the morning. I have a sciatica, a pain. And when I begin begin the walking meditation, that pain can be very strong.
Mm.
And as well, my mind is sort of thinking about things.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, so I'm in more of a worldly state of mind and body. But as the mindfulness grows and the mind becomes unified, that pain goes away completely. Which is, I'm not sure if that is because of mindfulness, but it's the mindfulness and the enlightenment factors seem to relax me completely, and that pain completely goes away.
Very good.
So I don't know.
Yeah, I think because now, rather than you select that object to pay attention, now the mind has withdrawn from that and recognize its own kind of a solace, kind of a refuge, which has no phenomena. So once the mind recognizes that state and resting there happily, then this may be there, but you are not being bothered by that.
Yeah, and I'm aware of that sciatica pain as I'm walking because it's pretty strong, but I try to just bring an open awareness to it and just pay attention to it, but without any kind of like, why is this happening? Are you suffering added to
that? Yeah, as you said, it should be open awareness, not a selected, focused attention.
Yeah, it's not like with some like urgency that I really need to pay attention to this, but there it is.
Yeah, it is. Now, that's a case that some yogis actually do the mistake where when they have the capacity to keep the mind completely unattached, they purposely go and investigate this kind of phenomena.
Okay. Yeah.
So that is the mistake, actually. That's a mistake. Because then they become more intense and more unbearable, and they suffer, basically.
Yeah.
So because they already have the capacity to be away from them. So when you have the capacity to completely relinquish them and completely become independent, why are you going and again bothering it? So that's a mistake, actually, sometimes we do. We should avoid it, basically. Yeah. Open awareness may be there. So when you have a kind of open awareness, you may feel it. Something is wrong there. There's a little pain available. But it's a kind of your open awareness can catch it. Not that you completely direct your attention to that, focus your attention to that and try to investigate. Not that.
Okay.
It should be more painful.
So, and maybe that's the time when we need to cultivate a little more tranquility.
Tranquility, exactly. Now, as you said, so as you're doing your walking meditation, so you are coming to that balance, complete relinquishment, complete giving up of things. So the mind has given up everything and it uplifted. And now it doesn't want to bother about these conditioned phenomena.
Yeah, it's uninterested.
Uninterested. Yeah.
Okay, thank you, Bhakti. Thank you very much.
Okay, we can come back to you, Jennifer.
Okay, thank you, Bhante. I'd like to invite Yashan for the next question.
Thiruvan Sarnai, Bhante.
Yeah, Thiruvan Sarnai.
I hope you can hear me.
Yes.
Alright. First of all, thank you so much for the talk. I really enjoyed that and the discussion. And with that, before I start my question, I wanted to, I was listening to Dhamma Vichita's question, why Sariputta is playful on this type of going from one state to another. I was thinking the same, but I also thought, like maybe it's more than a playfulness, it's just a task to sort of develop, I guess, without being, without getting attached to it, but just trying to sharpen that knowledge. Could that be one of the reasons, I guess, because that's something what we all supposed to strive, trying to sharpen that knowledge?
Well, could be also. Because by sharpening them and you're properly doing certain exercises, you are very much like sharpening them, which also could be, because rather than simply keeping them as it is, so you do some certain adjustments, sharpening, changing, and so you become more proficient about the enlightenment factors.
Right. So, it's, I think... think about it, if you are a student learning mathematics, mm. and then you sort of practice yes. to sharpen your math skills, because mm. you don't know where the questions are going to come.
Correct.
When you go to the exam, the mm. similar kind of way, I was thinking, could that be a reason? So anyway,
correct.
That was
yes.
my thinking. So with that, I wanted to ask a question about the mindfulness, the fully awareness of it, and that variables or the Sariputta's experience that you were describing, I guess. And when you talk about that, and I was thinking, you know, like when I experience the body sensations of being mindful and I feel the heartbeat, but if I concentrate on that, I don't feel that I am sitting at that point.
Mm-hmm.
But the moment my thought goes into my, say, the sitting position of my buttock is sort of touching the chair, you know, and then I lose the heartbeat or the breathing or the sensations of, but I can be, so I don't know how to sort of ask this question kind of thing. What is the full awareness, and where, rather than thinking of one, but just to be, you know, not to sort of be focused, is that the best way to sort of think about it?
Yeah, so basically at the beginning you need to focus. So beginning in the sense, suppose yes. that you are practicing accordingly, linearly, say you are still developing the enlightenment factors, and you first establish mindfulness, and then you start investigating the various phenomena, mm-hmm. and that investigation has to be continued for a fair amount of time. And then as a result of that investigation, slowly, mind starts abandoning them. It is not that we do, rather mind naturally start disinterested. It's no more, does not want to get involved now. And slowly, mind starts relinquishing things, abandoning things, letting go of things. And when it happens, now you give up all the five grasping aggregates. So that is where the anisita, appanihita, or rather we can say anisita and anupadana. So mind doesn't want to associate anything, and mind doesn't want to cling on to anything. Now the mind is very much like relinquished, very much like released. So while you are there, now you don't need to focus attention to anything.
Okay, thank you. I'd like to invite Nandana for the next question.
Thank you, Jennifer. One thing, I guess you can hear me, right?
Yes.
Okay. So I was actually listening with interest to the first set of questions that you got today.
Yeah.
Very happy to hear that the Dhamma Vichaya is not, you know, the conceptualization or analysis of the Dhamma, but instead it very intuitive kind of awareness or investigation of the phenomena. That is what I always understood. So I'm very happy. I was very happy to hear that. actually, two questions. One is, Bhante, this is very much my practice also. I towards like the end of my sitting sessions, usually the last 15 minutes or so, I usually get to kind of basically check enlightenment factors, whether they are present or absent or whether they are there. One question I had was, for me, it looks like in my practice at least, maybe I'm very kind of a beginner, but I seem to kind of feel that the mindfulness, if I have the enlightenment factor of mind, if I'm experiencing or if I'm having or if I become aware of the mindfulness enlightenment factor, I always have the effort or the virya, and I also have Dhamma Vichaya.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I cannot check out just only one of them, all three of them. What are your comments on that?
Maybe possible. That's why, I mean, now say for example, you are investigating certain phenomena. So if you are investigating certain phenomena, you are doing it with effort. You can't do it without effort. But assume assume that the mind has stopped investigation, it has completely given up things, and now mind simply rest, taking a rest and completely relaxed, resting, and nothing is there in the mind, no association at all. Now, some sharpness is there, as we already discussed, some sharpness is there, some intuitive awareness is there, intuitive clarity of the mind is there, but no phenomena. So then, very much like your effort has to be more relaxed. Not that you are at the beginning, it also may be with little effort you may be maintaining, because still some intruding thoughts and, you know, disturbances can harm the case. But as we continue, it has to become more and more effortless.
So what you're saying is that mindfulness and Dhamma Vichaya can be present without the presence of effort.
Effort.
Right?
Correct.
Okay.
The thing is, in case if we want to effortfully investigate something, there may be a kind of effort you need to initiate. In order to initiate the process, probably you have to have certain effort. But assume that you are not having that either. You are merely calming down. You are merely relaxing. Then your effort has to be very minimal.
Minimal it may be, but it should be present. That's what I thought. I mean, I always felt as if there's an effort. Maybe I was too, kind of, I was kind of making an effort. I mean, I was making kind of an extra effort, maybe.
Mm.
I always felt that there was an effort, because even to maintain mindfulness.
Mm-hmm. No, I can't agree. No, thing is, as we continue, that effort has to become less and less.
Okay.
Because the thing
even,
is...
Even with Dhamma Vichaya, even with the presence of Dhamma Vichaya.
Yeah, I feel so. Because the case is, now say for example like this, now say the hindrance power is still there. There are certain thoughts trying to pop up with sensuality, certain thoughts to pop up with ill will. And all those disturbances are still, you know, trying to disturb the process. Such case, you have to be very vigilant, very alert, and fair amount of energy has to be maintained in the mind to avoid those kind of disturbances. But suppose that you continue the practice for a fair amount of time, now the hindrance power become more and more weaker. Now no more thoughts much related to the sensuality, no more thoughts of ill will, and no doubts. So you are very much like confident. Everything is very smooth. Now you don't need much effort. You can relax. Because no disturbances. There are no intruders. There are no enemies. So you can simply take a nap. Something like that.
Right. Yeah, I know exactly what you're saying. But what I find is that once I reach that state of mind, where the you know, because the way I become aware of Dhamma Vichaya, or the way I kind of exercise or develop Dhamma Vichaya, is I always try to examine the hindrances, the presence or absence of hindrances in the mind, and that is how I, at least the way I understand it, is that my Dhamma Vichaya helps me to be aware of the presence, absence of hindrances in the mind.
Good.
Or a mind that has no hindrances, like you said, completely, like, you know, the hindrances don't arise very often, or not at all.
Correct.
So you feel that if the mind is blank or absent of any hindrances whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
Once I reach that state, I kind of feel as if I'm shifting slowly towards equanimous mind. So I no longer, I don't know how to say, almost like I start being very equanimous, like,
okay,
you
know, it's yeah.
very relaxed.
Exactly.
Very relaxed. Mm-hmm. All right. So, okay. So that's what you're explaining. So then I have another question, Bhante. This is a very subtle thing that I always try to kind of distinguish between these two. Now, as we said, like, Dhamma Vichaya helps us to be aware of the presence, absence of hindrances or any other phenomena in the mind, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, what is the difference? How would you explain the difference between mindfulness and Dhamma Vichaya?
Mm-hmm. No, I think the mindfulness is merely the presence of the mind. Okay, you are aware. And that awareness also, effortless awareness, it is not that you are purposefully maintaining it, very much like the mind is endowed with it. Mind is inherited that, it's there, the presence is there. So it is not mere blind presence, but you are vigilant, very sharp. So that sharpness is the attribute of the investigation, the Dhamma Vichaya.
So one last question, Bhante, on the enlightenment factors, the one before last, before equanimity comes concentration, right?
Yeah.
Now concentration, I think once you mentioned this, and there are different types of concentrations, like
exactly.
Now there can be concentration where I can be aware of my breath and I kind of completely focused on my breath alone.
Correct.
Right?
Correct.
And that is one type. And then I also can relate with the concentration, which I try to be always practicing in my practice, is to be kind of have an open awareness, but that open awareness in the present moment, and it takes some effort at the beginning, but you maintain that open awareness without getting mixed up with any of the thoughts or anything like that, just open awareness. But that is very different to that awareness of, you know, the being concentrated on one object,
exactly,
one particular object.
Exactly.
So here in the enlightenment factors, which type of concentration should we be focusing on?
Yeah, actually, as I said, so this concentration enlightenment factor also go through an evolution. At the beginning, say you are purposefully investigating particular phenomena, so there you have a distinct kind of a focused attention. So your mind is not distracted and you want to investigate a particular selected phenomena, your mind is concentrated there. Your mind is fairly pointed there, your mind is well focused there. So that is the concentration available there. So that is one type, as you mentioned. So as we continue the practice, now that investigation develops certain wisdom, so that mind relaxes that investigation, mind relaxes that grasping, and mind start maintaining kind of distance, and slowly, slowly it becomes dispassionate about the whole process. And now you are still having some concentration, but not very, very, you know, intense, but kind of relaxed, concentration. Now what you see is very much like a flux, what you see. And later, assume that mind has completely given up everything. No phenomena are available. Now it's very much like a blank. No thoughts, no phenomena. But still, type of concentration is available, but no phenomena to be concentrated. So the mind has some openness. As you said, it's a completely different kind of a concentration. We can't use the term concentration. The term concentration is not appropriate there. We can simply say complete clarity of the mind. Right. So you can see anything, whatever happens in the mind, because you have complete clarity. So this kind of concentration, I feel it is more, we can call it as samahita chitta, where it has no wavering of the mind. It doesn't want to shift onto anything, and it is very stable.
That's right, yes.
Yeah.
So that's what I have been kind of experiencing. I also found that that type of concentration or samahita or whatever, that mind state, it very easily leads to equanimity also.
Definitely.
It is much easier.
Mm-mm.
It is much easier to get into equanimity and be aware of equanimity because your mind is not kind of confined. It's almost like the mind is very expansive,
mm-mm,
very spacious.
Exactly, right? Exactly.
Okay, but yeah, that's what my confusion was, that concentration, the word, and I always thought, okay, is this the right thing to do? Because I by that time, you know, it's after, you know, you pass that initial stage, I don't feel the breath, like in breath, out breath, that kind of thing.
Not necessary. Yeah, not necessary.
Sorry. Okay.
Yeah.
Right. Thank you, Bhante.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Therwan Sanai.
Hi, Bhante. I have a question about the enlightenment factors. So, similar to when we do like the elements meditation, we are noticing all of various characteristics of the four elements, but we're not actually analyzing and investigating or even labeling that, oh, this is actually the earth element. I'm feeling this, this movement, so that's the air element.
Mm-hmm.
So is it similar for the enlightenment factors where as long as we kind of maintain this present open awareness, the enlightenment factors are naturally balancing out, and
mm-hmm,
we don't even need to necessarily research or investigate, am I, you know, over in this particular enlightenment factor, am I under in this? Do I need to balance this or that?
Mm-hmm.
It just naturally balances.
Mm-hmm.
Is
mm-hmm
that correct, Bhante?
Yeah, I also agree with that. So because thing is, if I'm over enthusiastic about it, if I want to do some sort of a purposeful manipulation type of thing, then it actually produces some kind of an ego. It can produce some sort
mm-hmm
of a person. Say, I am a person, I am capable of, I need to check it, so that the presence of I can come to the picture and you are kind of messing up the thing now. But if things are very smoothly happening, everything is well balanced, the evenness of the mind is properly available, and we shouldn't need to, confuse the case. We don't need to disturb the situation. We just have to enjoy it. We just have to maintain it. But I feel what Venerable Sariputta explains here, now after he become the fully enlightened, he is now no more having any kind of an ego. There is no asmimana at all. There is no the sense of I am at all. Now he may be doing all sorts of these things, but not having any ego, not having any,
mm-hmm,
not having any me, myself, I am doing it, I am capable of. There is no such kind of I factor involved. So I feel there is a clear distinction in that also. Because sometimes we become more always enthusiastic and I want to become more proficient, I want to become more smart. So then we are going in the wrong direction. Because we are not fully enlightened, we are not arahants. We are still, you know, trying to understand these things. So when the mind is at a proper balance, if I am messing up the thing, so then I am doing a wrong thing.
Mm-hmm. Okay,
yeah.
Great. Thank you. That definitely verifies my understanding. And so is it also true then to say that until we've, you know, complete mastery of the enlightenment factors, which I guess we won't be able to attain until we've actually become an arhant, then only at that point where we're devoid of an ego and
mm-hmm
we're an arhant, then should we, if we want to further hone and master the practice, then that's when we should investigate further into the enlightenment factors and start to actually, I guess, in a way, play with it or
mm-hmm,
you know, enhance it in some way.
No, I think on the other hand, Jennifer, now Buddha mentioned that, you know, the reflect about the mind. Okay, you see the kind of overall state of the mind. In that introspection, if you understand, okay, my mind is agitated today. Okay, now you need to do something.
Mm-hmm.
So that means that the last investigation factors like tranquility, concentration, equanimity has to be heightened because the the mind has agitated. Assume that you feel lethargic, you feel monotony, and you feel, you know, drowsy. So that means you need to do more investigation. You need to arouse energy. So the first group, the active group, has to be more given prominence. So likewise, time to time, introspection is something that Buddha encouraged. Abhikkhanam sakanchittam pachavekkitabbam. So Buddha say, often monks, you need to investigate the mind. You need to reflect about the mind. Am I maintaining proper balance, or am I not have lost the balance? So probably you may feel it. Now, when the mind become agitated, so when presence of mindfulness is there, the mindfulness enlightenment factor is always there, then it will give a warning. Okay, you are losing your balance. You become more agitated. So it will give that warning. Then we may have to do the adjustment.
And exactly like you said, Bhante, but I also feel like what you are mentioning about is really just seeing the hindrances that arise in mind. I'm not even investigating whether, you know, this enlightened factor is like too much or too little. I'm just investigating, do I have a hindrance?
Mm-hmm.
And then take the appropriate action to address that hindrance, and correct. Then naturally the enlightenment factors will again balance out.
Exactly.
Is that correct?
Yeah, definitely. Because, you know, these two are completely opposite phenomena. The hindrances and the enlightenment factors are completely opposite. So we'll explain in the Kaya Sutta, in the Bojjhanga Sangyutta. So when the hindrances are there, the enlightenment factors are, we can say, absent or completely weaker. When the enlightenment factors are strong, proper, balanced, then the hindrances are weaker or absent. So therefore, as you mentioned, if you notice any presence of any hindrance, so that means you need to take an action so that it will be abandoned and the enlightenment factors take over.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you very much,
Bhante. Tadwansanai.
I do have a written question here. It says, most respected Bhante, can yogis also practice Bojjhanga in different way when they want or wish, depending on the situation, as arhan? Please advise.
You can try that. Because now, say for example, we just take a simple scenario, like say you have to attend a meeting, you have to attend an exam, right? Attend a kind of a conversation with others, we are full alert, sharp mentality is necessary, then probably you can, arouse energy, you can be more vigilant, and you can do a little bit of investigation if necessary, so that your sharpness of the mind is more available. So it is, probably you can try that. But as we all discussed, during the practice, if everything is well balanced and the mind comes to a quiet, well balanced state, now we don't need to mess it up. Let it be. Let the mind calm down. Let the mind properly maintain that balance. So we are very much like enjoying it then. We don't need to mess up it. But as we also mentioned, that any intentional activity can cause the presence of I. The I factor can come to the picture. So that also we need to be careful.
Okay, thank you, Bhante. I believe that's the last questions that we have on our side.
Okay, fine. So then we can conclude today's Dhamma discussion. We have spent 1.5 hours and discussing and practicing and listening to the Dhamma. And I will recite the traditional verses to share the merits. Ettavata ca amhehi sambatang punya sampadang sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhiya. Ettavata ca amhehi sambatang punya sampadang sambe bhuta anumodantu sambha sampatti siddhiya. Ettavata ca amhehi sambatam
punya sampadam sambe satta anumodantu sambha sampatti siddhiya. Akasatta ca bhummatta devanaga mahiddhika punyam tang anumoditva ciram rakkantu sasanam. Akasatta ca bhummatta devanaga mahiddhika Punyang tangan modit vajram rakam tu desnam. Akasakta jubumakta devanaga mahiddhika. Punyang tangan modit vajram rakam tu mangparam. Idam bodhati nang hotu sukita hontu nateo. Idam bodhati nang hotu sukita hontu nateo. Idam bodhati nang hotu sukita hontu nateo. Emina punya kamina mame balas magamo. Satang samagamo hotu yavane bana patia. Emina punya kamina mame balas magamo. Satang samagamo hotu yavane bana patia. Emina punya kamina mame balas magamo. Satang samagamo hotu yavane bana patia.
Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.
Thank you, Bhante. Teruan sanai.
Ya, teruan sanai.